You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Live from Chicken Town, this is the Flopcast, episode 385.
On Flopcast.net.
Kevin and Cornflake like to have coffee and cartoons, and so they turned on their microphone and made a Flopcast just for you. Might be sorry, they'll still turn your sad frown upside down. Coming at you live from Chicken Town.
Yes, yes, hello, kids. This is weird, but it's just me in the studio this week. No Cornflake, no Mayor, no, they all left. I've been left alone here in Chicken Town. It's bizarre. But I guess this is a chance for us to talk, right? We never talk anymore, you and I, do we? How are you? Hello. This is just one of those weird scheduling things where we're going to have to wait another week to catch up with Cornflake. But coming off of our DragonCon shows, of course, we had a panel to share with you. So you don't have to listen to me rambling incoherently much longer. We're just going to throw to a DragonCon panel. And man, this was a fun panel. I know you're going to love it. Fits right in with the kind of stuff we talk about here on the Flopcast. And especially when we say the name of the panel, you'll know what I'm talking about. Because this was Cousin Oliver Was Framed, Classic Sci-Fi Sidekicks. So come on, we're so obsessed with Cousin Oliver. So it's sort of a weird panel in that we're covering sidekicks, kid sidekicks from movies and TV and whatnot, like Robin, of course, and all the rest of the Teen Titans, a lot of comic book stuff. But then at the same time, we're talking Cousin Oliver and the Cousin Oliver effect of adding little kids to the cast of long-running shows to try to keep them going a little longer. So come on, this is fun. How could this not be a fun conversation? And great people on this panel. You're going to hear Michael Bailey and Michael Williams and Gary Mitchell and a whole room full of crazy people. If you listen carefully, you might even hear the mayor of Chicken Town just laughing in the background because the mayor and a bunch of friends of ours showed up to be in the audience. And now you get to be in the audience right along with us. I'll check back in with you on the other side, but right now, let's go back to Labor Day weekend, Saturday afternoon, I believe, in the American Sci-Fi Classics track room at DragonCon, Atlanta, Georgia. This was Cousin Oliver Was Framed, Classic Sci-Fi Sidekicks.
So before we get started, hi everybody, DragonCon 2019! The hangover should be off by now. I expected better. All right, so DragonCon, as always, is raising money for charity. This year's charity is the American Heart Association in memory of a longtime DragonCon volunteer who passed due to heart issues, so the donation is in their memory. DragonCon will match up to $100,000 in donations, dollar for dollar. So let's make DragonCon kick out 100K. The blood drive is also still going on. Every year, the blood drive, they manage to raise more blood than they did the year before. Let's keep that record-breaking streak going. They are very particular, though. It has to be your blood.
Yeah. So you can't bring it in a jar?
Nope.
Say, give me a t-shirt?
I tried. It didn't work. So please do that. And like you said, you get a t-shirt. And as a DragonCon pro tip, if you go donate blood, it's easier to get drunk later that evening.
True.
So you get drunk cheaper. Save money.
Nothing but really good advice here on the Classics Trek.
We're all about the good life choices.
So as social studies teacher used to say at my school, so do drugs.
Brandon.
Yeah, we see wisdom comes from mistakes.
Yes.
And mistakes that come from DragonCon.
Hey Gary, what are we talking about today?
Oh, well, you're the moderator. Why don't you tell
Am
us?
Am I?
Yeah. Congratulations.
I thought you were the moderator.
No,
okay.
I just made you the moderator.
Wow. I'm honored. Okay. Well, in that case, hi, and welcome to...
I mean, you made the ribbon.
I got ribbons here for everybody. This is Cousin Oliver Was Framed, Classic Sci-Fi Sidekicks. So you're in the wrong room, all of you. But we're locking the door. Mike and Sue are about to lock the door as they leave. Thank you.
Now, Cousin Oliver from
so
the Brady Bunch.
Yeah, so explain the panel title, I suppose.
Yeah, no, were you guys inspired by my badge ribbons to name the whole panel?
It was that great classic synergy.
It's just a happy coincidence.
Yes.
But yes, my name's Kevin. I host.
Oh, yeah, we should introduce ourselves.
I host a podcast called The Flopcast, part of the ESO Network. It's a very silly, geeky, ridiculous show. We do it every week. And I've got Flopcast badge ribbons for everybody. And man, could there be a better ribbon for this panel right now? Because I have Cousin Oliver badge ribbons. So if you'd like one of these beautiful Cousin Oliver badge ribbons, come get one.
All that beautiful badge footage.
When the panel is over, come get a ribbon. And that's who I am. Who are you?
My name is Michael Bailey. I'm a podcaster. I talk about comics. I have a collection of shows on what I call the Fortress of Baileytude Podcasting Network. I've got cards up here. I don't have badge ribbons, but I have plans for next year.
All right. Other Michael.
I'm Michael Williams. I'm a novelist. I write science fiction, horror, and urban fantasy. And I have free samplers from my publisher up here with a whole bunch of different people's books, a few sample chapters if you'd like those. And I also have done a couple of podcasts. One of them we talked about just a minute ago, Cocktails Over Cocktails. But the other one that I'm probably proudest of in this context is Let's Watch Cop Rock, where two friends and I got drunk and watched all 11 episodes of Stephen Bochco's 1991 police procedural musical and then talked about it.
Was that one single 11-hour podcast episode?
No. Oh, God. I think we would have died. No, but we did, like, once a week for 11 weeks, sit down and watch an episode and then spend an hour talking about it.
That's beautiful. Gary, who are you?
My name is Gary Mitchell, along with Joe Crow. I am the co-director of this track. I am a podcaster in semi-retirement at the moment because my co-host is recovering from thyroid surgery. But anytime you hear someone say they're a podcaster on a panel, take a shot. Your liver will not survive. And I was very into Kid Sidekicks, I think.
Yeah, so the panel is Classic Sci-Fi Sidekicks, named in honor of the great Cousin Oliver from the Brady Bunch. So I think we're talking kid sidekicks in general as opposed to the adult-level sidekick. We're going to try
to more focus on
kids. On the kids, but we can drift. That's fine. Now, Cousin Oliver, does anyone anybody not know who Cousin Oliver is? It's okay. We all know Cousin Oliver. Excellent.
I didn't know until I was on this panel.
Really?
Yeah.
You just learned about Cousin Oliver for this panel?
Yeah.
That's terrific. So at the very brutal, bitter, horrifying end of the final season of The Brady Bunch, in desperation, they added a new little kid to the cast that was Cousin Oliver, suddenly moves in with the rest of the Bradys.
Because the appeal of the Bradys was the children.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, there aren't enough kids on this show. Let's add Oliver.
Sarcasm in that comment.
He was only in the final six episodes, so he was not there for long, just the very end of the last season, right up through the final episode where Greg's hair turns orange.
Yeah.
That was all we saw of Cousin Oliver, played by Robbie Rist. This is one of at least two panels in this room where we will be discussing Robbie Rist this weekend, because if you're crazy enough to be here Monday morning at 8:30, as some of us are, for the Cartooniversary panel, one of the Saturday morning shows that we will be celebrating the anniversary of is Kid Video from 1984, and Robbie Rist, Cousin Oliver, was also a member of Kid Video.
Because so, high tech turns us on.
Yeah. So a lot of hot wrist talk this weekend here.
And the reason I came up with the title Cousin Oliver Was Framed is in pop culture, especially at the time, a lot of people blame Cousin Oliver for both the quality in the Brady Bunch for going down and for getting the show canceled. Because we got to blame somebody, right?
Yeah, it's not that that show had gone on and run its course and that the culture was ready to kind of move on. No, it's the kid.
Blame the blonde kid.
But how many shows would do that? They was like, oh, ratings are flagging. Let's stuff a kid in there.
Oh, yeah. That list goes on and on. And Cousin Oliver,
Pains, Cosby Show,
Cousin Oliver, Cousin Oliver was not the first. One of the first times they did that. I know that at least My Three Sons predates the Brady Bunch by a couple of years in adding more new little kids to the cast. They had a little girl named Dodie. Was added to My Three Sons, I think, in the early 70s.
Show went into the early 70s.
My Three Sons ran for like 12 years or something.
Lord.
Yeah, that was a long-running show. They cycled through, like, they added a fourth son and kicked out the oldest son.
They so did that like would a, remain the three.
Yeah, they did like a sun shift. And then that wasn't enough, so then they added
went to Nam.
They added a little girl.
Tonight's very special episode of My Three Sons.
And then they made another movie about him called First Blood. It was there was a lot of connections there.
But yeah, Growing Pains, Family Ties. Family Ties is a good one because that Brian Bonsall, who's mm-hmm. the little brother that they added to Family Ties, they also did that with the same actor on Star Trek The Next Generation, right? That was Worf's son, kid.
Oh, and Family Ties was also the example of have the infant in one season, and then in next season they are miraculously aged like to three or four.
Yeah, yeah. That mm-hmm. happened a lot in sitcoms. You know what?
That happened in Growing Pains. Has everyone here seen Avengers? You know that waitress at the end that talks about Captain America? She was the little girl on Growing Pains.
What?
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's the kind of knowledge bomb you get on the classic.
Yeah. This is the kind of useless knowledge that will not serve you at all in real life.
What I like is that a lot of those, the kids adding the little kid to the cast, in many cases, they all had that same goofy round bowl haircut.
And they're all precocious. Yeah.
But that was like the classic hairstyle. If you're going to add a little kid to the cast, give him that same Cousin Oliver haircut.
Yeah, and I was never a super fan of the Brady Bunch. I think you were obligated to watch it during kind of our generation.
There were only three networks. It's all we had.
It's all we had. It's still all I had.
Oh, my God. I think I just went outside.
But we watched what they gave us, and we liked it.
I can't defend watching the Brady Bunch.
But one of the things about these kids, now, the Brady Bunch was geared towards a younger audience anyways, but shows like Growing Pains and The Cosby Show and Family Ties was a family show. It was meant for adults. Mm-hmm. So I always got the sense that, and that's why I never really liked these characters, is even as a kid who put up with a lot from my entertainment, it always felt like they were like, well, this is your character that you can identify with. And I never identified with them at all.
Well, yeah, getting back to like the whole roots of the kid's sidekick was it was the idea of the creator people, usually the suits, that we have to have a kid in here for the kids to identify with. That's mm-hmm. the whole reason the whole mm-hmm. Robin got stuck with Batman.
Yeah.
And
yes
I,
and no.
Okay, go.
Robin was created, yes, as an like to for the kids to have someone to identify with, but it was also so that Batman had someone to talk to. Uh-huh. He was kind of the Watson character, and yeah. they didn't want to do like another adult. So, because in the early adventures, Batman was just kind of talking to himself. Now, nowadays, you see that you just assume they're on like a wireless headset or something. but there was that, and then after that, with all the other kid sidekicks like Speedy. Who became a heroin addict. And, you know, it's funny, now that I think about that, it sounds like what teen stars go through sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
right, yeah.
Yeah,
very much so.
Speedy was working right from the teen star script.
And, mm-hmm. and Bucky and sure. Wing and the Star Spangled Kid flipped the script because the Star Spangled Kid was the kid, and Stripesy was his adult sidekick.
Mm-hmm. Yep. A grown man named Stripesy.
But did anyone actually ever identify with the sidekick? It's like, I want to be Batman. I don't want to be Robin.
Yeah,
the
thinking was the kids will identify with the kid character, and I don't know that that was correct. Well, the kids were perfectly fine watching or reading adult superheroes.
Kid sidekicks fill a gap in the potential experience of watching these characters because... Yeah, a lot of us watch it or read it and we want to be the main star. But a lot of us watch it or read it and think, and I'm stealing from a friend of mine who just walked into the room by saying this, but some of us watch and read it and think, I don't want to do that, but I do want to hang out with the person who does that. And a lot of times that's what mm-hmm. the kid sidekick does. I think Bucky Barnes is a really interesting example, though, of an inversion of a lot of the roles of a kid sidekick because his job in the comics was to be somebody who did not know that Steve Rogers is Captain America until he walked into the room and sees Steve Rogers putting on the suit. And so for a long time, his role is to not be the person who is with this hero, but is the person from whom the hero is keeping the secret.
Yeah. So, Bucky, do you like Gladiator movies?
Right.
Yeah. The other purpose that Robin served from Batman's perspective is I'm going to take this kid and dress him up in bright yellow and red. Then when the bullets start flying...
There is a wonderful, wonderful little book about called How to Be a Superhero.
Yes.
It came out in the 80s, and it had a representation of that as like the kid sidekick. The way it's played in the comics, oh no, Batman, the ninjas are going to kill you with throwing stars. I will be in the way. And then, but what actually happened? Come here, kid distraction.
Steve Dillon did the artwork in that, by the way. Creature artist.
There's a really fascinating book that I have not read, but I have read about, and I'm kind of afraid to read the actual book, called Seduction of the Innocent.
It
was written about Batman and Robin, basically, and how the author was terrified that they were gay. He was not terrified of the pedophilia. He was just terrified that they were gay. And that really got rid of kid sidekicks for a long time.
Yeah, Dr. Frederick Wortham, who I like to call the Dr. Phil of his era, except he was a real doctor, unlike Dr. Phil. Comic books in general had parents groups up in arms and religious groups, like, almost from the beginning. If you look through the history, like as early as 1948, Catholic leagues were organizing book burnings and stuff like that. But Seduction of the Innocent was like a pop book. It was what, you know, it was a popular, you know, it wasn't something for academics. It was something for everybody. And he's just like, Wonder Woman is too much of a feminist and is trying to demasculate men. And Superman's a fascist. So basically, it's like the internet today was that book back in 1954. And
because they're always looking for a quick and easy reason for why kids are doing things they shouldn't be doing. Today it's video games, then it was comics.
Yep. And then the things like Frederick Wortham said about Batman and Robin is that Batman is concerned about Robin being injured, and they're lounging around in robes, and they have nice plants.
Yeah,
so,
talk about the lavish house that they lived in, and flowers were everywhere.
So this writer, at one point in a book called The Many Lives of Batman, wrote a thing, said, okay, so I guess to not be gay, they would have to hate each other, live in a shack, and not have any flowers about. And that would solve the problem.
Not have any flowers about.
I mean, I'd read
about
that comic.
No, but here's the thing. Going on with that real quick is that if you look at the comics and you take panels out of context, you can see that. But it really there was nothing there. It was just, it was a different time. But that sounds terrible.
Well, and, like, structurally, though, Kid Robin in a major way, and Kid Sidekicks in general, like, they almost always serve a totally innocent purpose. Mm-hmm. There's a great TV Tropes article about Kid Sidekicks in particular, and talking about how they all fall into one of two sort of mini tropes of the morality pet, the character that keeps them on the straight and narrow, mm-hmm. Ironically, or they are the wish fulfillment character, and they're who the viewer is supposed to see as themselves.
There's also the genius kid trope.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Sometimes it's, I got this little kid with me because he's a genius.
Like Wesley Crusher?
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
To stereo, yes. Very good.
But yeah, and TV, the TV Tropes article, I will also recommend it, is very good. I did a lot of research for this on there. But I also have to say, be very careful, because it is the black hole of the internet.
Yes.
So you click one article, and then all of a sudden it's like 12 hours later, and you haven't moved.
So then by the 60s, they thought, let's round up all these kid sidekicks and just make them their own team. And then we got the Teen Titans going out of that. So now it's all the sidekicks, they're all each other's sidekicks at that point.
And Marvel had a similar group of their Golden Age kid sidekicks, like Toro and Bucky and a couple other original creations.
Toro was the original Human Torch's kid sidekick.
And it's weird because, you know, we're talking about Cousin Oliver and we're talking about Robin, and they serve kind of similar but very different functions. It's because it's not like Mike Brady brought Cousin Oliver in to fight crime with him. Though that might have saved the show. I don't know.
Didn't they do a Brady superhero kind of thing, and as a cartoon?
They did two...
Well, there was the
animated.
The Filmation Brady Kids cartoon.
Yeah.
The Bradys were not superheroes, but there was an episode that guest starred Superman, and there was an episode that guest starred Wonder Woman, which was actually the first TV appearance of Wonder Woman, was on the Brady Kids cartoon.
That was aired.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yes, that aired. Yeah, yeah. There's also the Bizarro live action pilot.
And the thing that I hate, because I have this theory that fandom is a giant Rorschach test.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically, what are you willing to accept? And everybody has, if you look at, like, you get like 10 fans in a line and you have them all start walking at the same time and you throw out concepts to them, some of them will just stop because they've hit their wall of what they're willing to accept. So you have Stan Lee, who famously said, I hate kid sidekicks because they'd arrest the guy for child endangerment, mm-hmm. which is, one, massively blind to everything else he was doing in comics, but also it's just like, well, that's not the point. You know, yeah, if in real life, if you put on a costume and went and punched somebody in the face, they'd arrest you. But this is fiction. It's escapist fantasy. So if you're sitting there at that point saying, well, I'm going to put all these rules on it that I can put on a costume and I can go beat up a guy dressed like a clown, but man, if I get a kid in a costume and bring him with me, I'm just a terrible human being. I think you're losing something there.
Yeah. And that was actually one of the things that did differentiate Marvel at the time is Peter Parker either would have been an adult mm-hmm. or he would have been a kid sidekick to like Arachno mm-hmm. Man or something. What's really interesting though for me though is so much 80s television had to have a kid sidekick.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of your favorite examples of an 80s TV kid sidekick, Gary?
The one that always jumps to my head, even though it's not technically a kid sidekick, he filled that role, is Tweaky.
Oh.
Tweaky is definitely Buck's kid sidekick, even though he's not a kid.
A robot right kid sidekick.
Yeah, he's the right size. He's got the attitude, the precocious, the bitty bitty bitty,
yeah.
and just
he's got a shtick. He's the Mel Blanc. Something.
Yeah, voiced that's the whole reason they keep him around.
Voiced by Mel Blanc.
Yep.
So yes. You know. The one that always makes me laugh is the kid from the Mr. T cartoon.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The little white kid with the mohawk.
The little Mr. T wannabe
yeah.
kid. He kind of put on the growling Mr. T voice. And he had the dog. And the dog also had the mohawk. Everybody knows the Mr. T cartoon?
Oh, yes? Yeah. I had the cereal.
There was a cereal that went along with it?
And no, had it this morning. That's the weird one.
It was
I have a stash I've kept since the 80s.
We can hook you up.
We found a rich vein of Mr. T cereal.
It was Mr. T and a gymnastics team yeah. just traveling around in a bus together.
Because what could possibly go wrong there?
And the best episode, though, is there's an episode where they got trapped in a cave. Mr. T and a gymnastics team and a dog with a mohawk were all trapped in a cave, and they caught and cooked and ate inside the cave a giant snake. This is a Saturday morning cartoon. Mm-hmm.
This is the same cartoon that they also had an episode where they stumbled upon a kidnapping ring, and it was the first time as a kid that I ever learned that somebody would pretend to be your parent. And when you would say to another adult, oh, wait, this isn't my parent, they go, oh, they're just kidding around again. And I'm just like, well, that's even more terrifying than the kid on the milk carton. No, but again, those, it's like maybe separate from comics and just maybe how I'm geared. It's just like when I saw it on television, it always seemed kind of annoying because it didn't, it's gonna, again, the Rorschach test, it didn't feel natural. Or it just seemed silly. Like, you know, why would this little kid want, well, maybe there were little kids who wanted to be Mr. T. I don't know. But it just always seemed like, especially on the shows where they got the little kid and brought it in, that it didn't really ever add anything to it. And it seemed to be like, it's like the sign of desperation, basically.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think when they're tacked on at the end, they are sort of the television equivalent of a bad marriage in which two people decide the thing we really need to fix this is a child. I think that if they're like incorporated in from the beginning, they can really add something. I actually really liked Wesley because he was mm-hmm. a demonstration of a way that the Star Trek The Next Generation Enterprise was different from the original Enterprise. It was created to be a space where families lived.
Right.
You know, and he was a character that embodied that part of the world, that part of the setting, and incorporated it from the very beginning.
One of my favorite moments in this room was a few years ago. We were doing a Challenge of the Super Nerds, the Classic Trek trivia game, and Joe was running the game and said, okay, who in the audience can defend Wesley Crusher? And a whole bunch of hands went up. And then Joe said, not Will Wheaton. And all the hands went back down.
See, I honestly think that Wesley Crusher gets a terrible rap. Me and my wife recently watched the first season all at once, you know, like over a couple of days. And yeah, it could be kind of annoying, but it's like you're blaming a character for what the writer did to the character.
Yeah.
And that seems like grossly unfair, where, yeah, sometimes he was like the deus ex machina of the episode. But
that's the whole problem with him is if it hadn't done, if that hadn't been the only story they usually, if it was a Wesley episode, it was how did he break the ship and how is he going to fix, undo what he did.
Yeah.
But then in the same season, you have him trying out for Starfleet and passing the psychological test. And it was just like a,
that was a
really
great
solid
episode.
Mm-hmm. The fact that he went off with the Traveler at the end, all like that seemed like a terrible resolution to his character arc. But
then they kind of just hand-waved it because he showed back up for the movies. Like, oh, yeah, hey, yeah, how you doing?
But I really liked that he went from being a kid that was kind of a glorified intern to going to Starfleet to becoming an officer and serving in full uniform.
It was the first character that we saw embody the fantasy that the rest of us had,
mm-hmm,
of, well, I get to be on the ship, and then I get to join Starfleet, you know, and things like that. And I loved the fact that he went off and became the next Traveler, basically,
yeah,
because it was him. I felt like it was the character getting the satisfaction of exceeding the boundaries of what everybody else around him has achieved, when at the beginning everybody around him is convinced he will never even achieve their level of success.
And he was also much better when they finally put him in a uniform and not just that sweater.
Right.
It was a styling sweater. I can define a sweater, too.
I was an easy sell on Wesley because I was that age when the show debuted. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so I was like, yes.
Yeah. And it was Kid from Stand By Me.
Yeah, that
was excited.
Was the other
that, ooh,
thing.
Kid from,
like,
Stand By Me. Yes.
Like, I followed all those kids, even Corey Feldman,
oh,
unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely. While we're in the 80s, I know that one of the major kid sidekicks that we want to talk about, we've got to talk some Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Yes. Right? Yes. Short round.
Yeah. Maybe not the most appropriate name for a character, but a great character, a great sidekick.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that movie.
Hey.
It's just, I remember seeing it as, when we first got our first VCR, the first movie we watched was Raiders of the Lost Ark on it. So I was like a huge Indiana Jones fan, and I finally see, so I'm like 10, and I finally see like on cable Temple of Doom, and I'm like, this is really long and pointless. And I never really lost that. But Short Round, because it was that kid, that particular actor.
Yeah, Ki-Wei Kwan.
He was never really in the way. And like, what gets me about him is that he's there not just, it's not like they just decided to tag a kid in there. There's an emotional reason behind it. Indy promised to take care of him. It was like a promise to his dying father, basically.
This is a young kid, and yet they had a history together,
yeah,
already. And you feel that history in that relationship.
And he's the one constantly calling Indy out on his crap, which I absolutely loved.
But and at the same time, being just viciously loyal.
Yeah.
And, you know, you call him Dr. Jones.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are problematic aspects to the character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was the, yeah, it's the 80s. But, yeah, but still, I mean, there's kind of a fire to him that I like, that he, mm-hmm, is, he knows who he is, he knows who Indy is. I love the argument of the card game, but I think everybody loves that scene.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, he's competent without being hyper-competent.
Yeah, like when they're in the big fight scene, and he's like shadow boxing as Indy's fighting, but you're not seeing him take like a guy three times his size down.
Then the following year, Ki-Wei Kwan, same guy, went on to do Goonies, mm-hmm, which is sort
like
of a
whole group
sort
of
a gathering
sidekicks.
Of the sidekicks, right? With Sean Astin, who would someday be a Hobbit sidekick,
and Thanos,
a fuzzy-footed sidekick.
Yes, Thanos.
Thanos is in that movie.
Thanos is there. Martha Plimpton.
And that is something that is another thing that's kind of a dead genre right now, is the whole kid adventure film.
Mm.
To be all the time. You had the Goonies or the Explorers. It used to be,
yeah,
kids going out, doing something, getting in trouble.
Lost Boys.
Yeah.
And it's funny watching those, like when I was 12 years old, Monster Squad was shown on HBO. It,
yes,
seemed like every 3 hours.
Yeah.
And I loved that movie. Because, you know, it was a bunch. At the beginning, there was a fat kid reading comics, and I'm just like, holy crap, he gets to wield a shotgun and blow the merman away at the end. But I watched it as an adult. I'm like, wow, you couldn't make this movie again with this dialogue.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely not one that could be remade.
But
with
I think
the same script.
To a certain extent, though, that makes it weirdly realistic,
mm-hmm,
because I don't know how Shane Black did it, but he got how little boys talked in the late 80s,
mm-hmm,
in like a really real way. I don't know if he just like went to a playground. Well, I guess you can't, really can't do that.
There's a book. There's a book we talked about 10 minutes ago that might address that.
But you had like single kid movies like Flight of the Navigator,
yeah,
and stuff like that, which they're not exactly sidekicks, but those I feel are films that you do see yourself in. Mm-hmm. Because the main cast is a bunch of kids. It's not a kid hanging out with an adult.
I'd like to have my own spaceship.
Sure. That I mean, even The Last Starfighter is about a teenager.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's kind of another thing is, like, there is a line because there seems to be, there are the teen sidekicks, mm-hmm. and then there are the kid sidekicks, and it's a kind of a different vibe. Mm-hmm. Because I think it's age, I mean, obviously, but...
That's the difference.
But no, I mean, there's the teen adventure movies and then the kid adventure movies.
Yeah. I think probably my favorite teen sidekick was actually Princess Drusilla, who was Wonder Girl and Wonder Woman.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Deborah mm-hmm. Winger.
Yeah, they offered her a show to be Princess Drusilla. Really?
Oh, why did that not happen?
She turned it down because she said, I don't really want to get stuck playing superheroes on TV. And you know,
I guess she was right.
She's got three Oscars. To
be a movie star.
Okay,
yeah.
You know.
It played out well for her.
Yeah.
Yeah, but not for me, because I would have preferred more Wonder Girl. while we're back in 70s superhero talk, though, I also thought of the Super Friends had their own sidekicks.
Twice.
First Wendy and Marvin and Wonder Dog. And I guess the purpose that they served was to make the show more like Scooby-Doo.
Right. So, because there was a dog.
Yeah, I found the nerdiest thing about Wendy and Marvin. When Wonder Woman was created, she didn't assume the name Diana Prince. She assumed somebody's life. Mm-hmm. A military nurse named Diana Prince. That nurse went on to get married, have a kid, and that's Marvin.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, I think I've heard that, but where was that established?
The Super Friends comic book.
Oh, okay.
The one based on the series written by E. Nelson Bridwell, who wanted to connect everything.
Yep.
But it's funny because I prefer Wendy and Marvin to Zan and Jaina.
Yeah. Wendy and Marvin have that 70s cool. They're wearing bell bottoms.
I think we use different dictionaries or something.
No, I didn't say it was cool. I said it was 70s cool.
Okay.
In the 70s, this was cool.
I was way more into the Wonder Twins. So,
really? You know, okay. Yeah.
Well, Wonder Twins, obviously, they could do so much more with it. Wendy and Marvin, it was Scooby-Doo.
They had actual superpowers?
Yeah. Wendy and Marvin, it was just half the show, that season one, Super Friends. It was one hour long story, and half the time, you're just watching Wendy and Marvin and the dog just creeping around like they're on Scooby-Doo.
Well, that's because Hanna-Barbera had a hit with Scooby-Doo.
Oh, yeah.
And everything they made after had to fit that
so
formula.
Can we do Justice League cartoon? Yeah, but also make it Scooby-Doo.
But you can't call it Of America, because that's too jingoistic. So we're going to call them Super Friends.
Yes.
I just couldn't understand why, and this is a question that gets raised a lot about kids' sidekicks in general. Like, why would they let them be around? This is exceptionally dangerous.
Yeah, and I think modern creators have taken that to a creepy...
Well, Rick,
where's superhero Department of Labor? Where's the superhero OSHA that's going to check on the fact that these kids are going to die?
Mm-hmm. Brat Pack.
But Rick Vetch took it to the extreme conclusion with
Brat Pack.
Which was horrific to read.
Yeah,
where they took the kid superhero sidekicks and just took them to the nth degree. I mean, Grant Morrison would write this now.
In the first issue, you're introduced to the current generation of the kids' sidekicks, and they're all drug addicts. And the Robin character is talking to a priest about the fact that he's just turning 18, and the Batman character is getting very overt about what he wants to happen next. And at the end of the first issue, they're all killed by a guy wearing a gimp mask. And then so it's the story of them getting new kid sidekicks and how terrible it is. It's
a very
brutal
book.
Right.
Rick was in a bad mood in the 80s when he wrote that. I think.
Rick Veitch is always in a bad mood. What are you talking about?
But speaking of Brat Pack, though, from the real Brat Pack, one of my favorite lesser-known kid sidekick sci-fi examples would be Molly Ringwald in Space Hunter Adventures in the Forbidden Zone. That's young Molly Ringwald pre-Brat Pack stuff in a science fiction movie as the kid sidekick. And I watched it just a couple years ago, and I liked it. That movie is kind of unknown and obscure and forgotten about, but it's fun.
And refresh me, because I haven't seen it since I was like 10.
Yeah.
It's like a dystopian type future, right?
Yeah.
It's so, very Mad Max ripoff.
Kind yeah. of.
So in that context, the kid's sidekick isn't as weird because it's a brutal world to begin with. So right. the sooner they learn to deal with it, the better they're going to be able to survive later in life.
Yeah, it is not a story of him having kidnapped her off of a playground in suburbia and decided to take her to the outback where she will be, you know, helping fight savages or whatever. I don't know.
Right. But and that's, I notice as we're discussing all these kid sidekicks, almost all of them are guys.
Yeah,
sad to say. So there's an example, at least one of the rarer examples of a girl.
Yeah, because you had Wonder Girl, and that was pretty much it.
Yeah.
And Wonder Girl is funny because when she was introduced into the Teen Titans, that wasn't supposed to be who that was. There were Wonder Girl stories in the Wonder Woman comics that was just the adventures of Diana, Princess Diana, when she was a girl. But the guy who wrote Teen Titans was a writer named Bob Haney who didn't give a F about continuity or anything. And if he was going to write something, he was just going to write it. So he said, okay, that's fine. And he just said, okay, she's obviously her sidekick, but it's not. She is now, which led to five different Who is Donna Troy stories, each more convoluted than the last one.
Yeah, every time
she has an exceptionally complex biography at this point. Mm-hmm. And she has seen it all and been it all and done it all and lost her powers and been erased from the universe multiple times and then brought back
became
by people's memories and became the universe.
Became the universe.
Has mothered the guy who goes on to rule the future in a fascist empire and then stopped that from happening. She has done everything. Donna Troy is awesome.
Every time they try to clarify and simplify her origin, they just make it worse.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think the best take on Donna Troy is Phil Jimenez's, where he basically just leaned into all of that and said, okay, well, if all that had happened to one person, they would be really messed up and really need therapy. And this is the story of how this person realizes who they are and who they want to be.
But then in the 80s and especially in the 90s, you had characters like Carrie Kelly in The Dark Knight,
where
it was a female Robin. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Frank Miller has done many, many bad things. But what I liked about Carrie Kelly is that it's not that her parents were killed and she had to be adopted by Bruce Wayne. Her parents were drug addicts that didn't care about her. So this is how she went out and dealt with, you know, finding meaning in something. And there was a character named Stephanie Brown, who was the daughter of a villain called Cluemaster, that at first became a character called Spoiler, but then became a female Robin for a very brief period of time. And as you get into the 90s and the 2000s, there are more female sidekicks.
And I loved her as Spoiler, and I loved the fact, if anybody did not know the character, the reason she called herself Spoiler is she hated that her father was a supervillain, and she would go out to spoil his plots.
Of course, Batman had the many, you need to stop doing this, but here's a mission. Conversations.
Now, you had a question?
Well, have you ever heard of Nightmare and Spooky?
No. Spooky from the Casper cartoons?
Well, no, they were a golden age. Nightmare was a professional wrestler.
I'm on already.
Yeah, he fought crime.
Like
well,
you do.
Well, Spooky was not only his teen sidekick, he was also his manager. Like, most of the stories would begin with Spooky trying to get him booked for in a town. And then, oh, there's Nazis and we gotta go fight them.
Oh, this the standard traveling hero gig.
Yeah.
Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That was another big trope in the 70s of we have to travel town to town.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah, well, this was
so wonderful.
Yeah. 40s even better, so yeah.
Right.
We can throw this open to the room. Any kid sidekicks examples that people wanted to throw out and discuss?
Different strokes?
Yeah. Again, yeah, they brought in Sam. Oh, man, I hated Sam. Oh.
That is the other reason, and that's the other reason we kind of called this panel what we did. 9 times out of 10, every time they brought in the kid to try to pump ratings up, everybody hated him.
Yep. Yeah, that was Danny Cooksey was the kid who was also a country singer. But he had the Cousin Oliver hair also. He had the bowl cut.
Yeah, but so are you saying in the episode that he got kidnapped, you were just kind of hoping it would just stay that way?
Today on a very special Different Strokes.
Anybody kid sidekicks you wanted to throw out to the room?
Scrappy
Doo.
Hit Girl?
Everybody hates Scrappy Doo.
I think my favorite thing ever done with Scrappy Doo was a Cartoon Network commercial where he was hanging outside the studio where they were doing new cartoons and other characters were walking in and out and he's ranting at how he deserves a fair shot. And at one point, Scooby and Shaggy are like,
But for all that, we all hate Scrappy Doo, of course, more or less. But in Scrappy's defense, Scrappy Doo saved that show. In that Hanna-Barbera had to constantly retool the show and add new elements to it to sell it to the network year after year. And that's, they would not have picked up Scooby that year, except for they were sold on the pitch of, we're going to add this new character, Scrappy-Doo. And he had a very bumpy history, the creation of Scrappy-Doo. I know Mark Evanier has written about it, because it got very complicated as far as with the design and the voice, and it took a long time. And the result was a version that nobody was happy with, but that's what they sold.
Yeah, and the core idea could have worked as a counterpoint. You know, here's Scooby is this great big dog who's terrified of everything, and you have this little, you know, I can take him. It could have been a great counterpoint. Mm-hmm. Didn't happen, but it could have.
Could have done.
Now, how'd you feel about Scooby Dumb?
I like Scooby Dumb.
Yeah.
No, it's just, well, Scooby-Doo is fascinating to me to begin with, because it started out life as an animated version of Dobie Gillis.
Mm.
And then they lost the rights, but they had all these designs, so they're like, okay, we'll just put a dog in there.
That's why Shaggy looks like that.
Yes, it is. And I don't know, as a kid, I remember liking, like, your basic, you know, like, you know, we're in a new town and there's a haunted amusement park, and it turned out to be Old Man Wilson, and all that. Or, you know, the Scooby-Doo movies, where, you know, you got to treat kids to seeing Scooby and Shaggy team up with Jerry Reed.
As a kid,
I was very into that.
Oh, yeah.
The Sonny and Cher episode is legitimately great.
Love the Addams Family ones.
The Addams Family.
The new Scooby-Doo movies with a celebrity guest every episode.
I just kept waiting for it to be the Batman episode.
Of course. That was the best. Davy Jones. Yeah. Come on.
Right. Oh, the lady in the back, you had your hand up?
Well, there's two. One, he was a psychic from the very beginning. He's kind of like Scrappy Doo. That was Godzuki.
Yes, that's a great one.
I'm going to convulse and fall under the table in a second.
Like in Happy Days, at the very end, they brought in, Fozzie was like a teacher, and they brought in a new girlfriend and a daughter, so she was like the cutest guy.
Right, which was Heather O'Rourke, the little girl from Poltergeist.
Really?
Yeah, joined the cast of Happy Days right at the very end.
Oh, man.
There was also Spike. Really, remember Spike? There was like a little kid version of Fozzie named Spike.
Yeah. And Chachi was pretty much Chachi, a sidekick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man. He got his own spinoff.
That was just a pile of sidekicks.
Mr. Cool.
Yeah.
Oh, on the cartoon?
Yeah.
Yeah, the dog on the cartoon, Mr. Cool. Yeah.
Well, yes. Bond's not necessarily a kid, but late edition, the franchise killer, Ted McGinley.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I'm actually going to argue that Ted McGinley is a franchise killer, considering the shows he gets on, like, go on three or four more seasons.
Yeah, Happy Days ran a long time with Ted McGinley.
Ron Howard's children. And so did the Love Boat.
Yep.
Come on.
Though I do love the meta gag of them hiring him to be the new voice of Aquaman in the last episode of Brave and the Bold.
Jonathan Winters and Porky Mindy.
Yes.
Oh, Murph. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Poor Mindy gives birth to...
He's technically a sidekick.
Right?
Oh, kid, kid
technically
sidekick.
A kid sidekick. That's excellent. I was so horrified by Murph.
Oh, as a child, that just blew my mind. I was like, wow, they are aliens.
Hatched out of an egg.
I don't know why I suddenly had this flashback, but that time they did a Scooby-Doo series and they gave a Scrappy a sidekick with Flim Flam. Was it 13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo?
13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo, yeah. Which they're finally doing a movie to wrap up the 13th ghost.
Is Matthew?
Yeah,
Lillard
I know it's been
it?
Something we've all been on the edge of our seats for.
I've been up nights.
I think I heard Hit Girl earlier.
Hit Girl.
Yeah. Chaka going through my mind.
Chaka, interesting.
So Hit Girl is interesting. I've never read the comics, but I don't.
Yeah, don't.
Well, it's Mark Miller, so
yeah.
But I'm kind of fascinated that the movie version, where you had Nicolas Cage doing an Adam West impersonation.
That is one of the funniest things.
It's just like, I think what the movie tried to highlight, what the comics probably set out to highlight, but it's Mark Miller, so it's more sensational, is how messed up this is. It's another Brat Pack type of idea, where you've taken this little girl, and instead of her, like, there's a scene in the movie, she's like, where she says something like, I want a doll, and Nicolas Cage is like, what? She goes, no, I just want a new weapon. He's like, oh, good. I was worried there for a second. And it's funny, but I think it's supposed to highlight, like, wow, that's really messed up.
Like, the movie, it's so easy to cheer for because the movie is good at like, making these charismatic characters appealing. But it's also such a horrible situation.
Mm-hmm.
And it is at, like, a moment's thought. I like this about it, what I'm about to say. I should emphasize. I'm not saying that I disagree with you. But if you just think about it for like 30 seconds after you're done enjoying it, then you think, oh, should I feel enjoyment about that? Should I feel bad about having enjoyed that? And it's a really complicated relationship that they create between their property and the viewer that I find very compelling.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else have another sidekick we haven't talked about that you like?
Gabrielle from
Xena. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
And who was the one on Hercules?
Aeolus.
Yes.
The most competent man in ancient history. Because he kept up with Hercules.
Also, Dawn Summers.
Oh, Dawn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Dawn was thank you for bringing that up. Dawn was a great way of Joss looking at this topic in general.
Mm.
I mean, that was the whole point of, I want to satirize them adding a kid.
And
they did it beautifully, that season finale, and there she is, and Mom!
Right. I think that there's a lot to like about Dawn as a character. I think that there are a lot of ways in which they very consciously created an annoying character because they were creating a kid sister that was getting in the way of somebody who had unwillingly become the savior of the world approximately 47 times. You know, and I thought that that was a really interesting setup for a character. That in the past, there were people whose assumption was, well, if we make this thing a member of her family, she will have to protect it.
Mm-hmm.
And they do not anticipate that the person that they are sending the key to is somebody who has grown up in a world of Cousin Oliver and Scrappy-Doo and things like that. And that her first reaction will be to hate it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, another great 80s kid sidekick show. You remember Voyagers?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
That was like it was time traveling. They were traveling through time, fixing things in history. And it was a guy who was like part of a group of time traveling history people. And then he ends up getting stuck with this kid tagging along with him, who was Mino Pelucci.
Yeah.
Who was that kid with the curly dark hair.
Soleil
that was
Moon Frye's older brother.
Yes, he was in every show in the early 80s.
Yeah, so, mm-hmm.
And sticking with time travel theory, the one that most people really, really hate, Adric.
Oh, yeah.
For Doctor Who.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of, I mean, I hated him as a kid, but he also did get one of the most actually legitimate tragic deaths in TV when he got killed trying to keep a spaceship from crashing and ended up, it's a long story, go to Dr. Who track. But yeah, I mean, it literally, I hated this character, but when they did his death and at the end of the episode, which is the black screen with his broken little medallion thing, it was just like, oh man.
Hey, speaking of Cousin Oliver, do you guys know Big John, Little John? So this was in 1976, like 2 years after Brady Bunch ended. It was still Sherwood Schwartz, the producer of Brady Bunch, produced a Saturday morning live-action show called Big John, Little John, starring Robbie Rist, Cousin Oliver. And the wacky premise is a guy, a grown man, an adult, he's a school teacher, a principal or something, drinks from the fountain of youth, and then magically transforms into young Robbie Rist, and then flips back and forth between being a grown man and being a little kid at random.
Oh, that won't mess you up at all.
And right. I mean, he's married, he has a wife, and he has a job, and sometimes he'll suddenly turn into a little kid. That was a Saturday morning show.
All right, with Cousin Oliver. Her hand up.
What about the famous Jar Jar Binks?
Oh. He's definitely a sidekick.
I wouldn't consider him a kid's sidekick.
Yeah.
He's definitely a sidekick designed for kids.
Yeah.
It's more of the worst thing that ever happened.
Right.
As opposed to a kid's sidekick.
Yeah.
All right. You hadn't said anything yet?
Speedy / Arsenal.
Okay, yeah. We touched on him a little bit, but yeah.
That was an interesting example because when they revealed that he was a heroin addict, it was shocking because they had never done that with a comic book character like that before. The boundaries of what was allowed in the comics were starting to break down a little bit thanks to Marvel. And unfortunately, when you do something like that to a character, sometimes less qualified writers will use that as the crutch of giving the character a character, you know, characterization. So I always felt that, because it's like everything bad happens to Arsenal. He loses his arm. They kill his daughter. You know, it's just, he's just a, you know, he's a drug addict. And to me, that gets less and less interesting as time goes on. It's like they did it for shock value, but it doesn't. It has diminishing returns after that.
It becomes a trauma conga line at a certain point.
Kitty Pryde,
and to a lesser extent, Jubilee. Yeah. Like all the little kids we're going to have hanging out with Wolverine for about a year.
Mm-hmm. My favorite thing about Jubilee is that she's basically in the Robin costume as a dig.
Hands over here. Hilarious. Chris in the back.
Batmite, what are your thoughts?
Oh. Batmite.
Batmite would not falls in that same category as Gazoo.
Yeah, the Great Gazoo. It's a a little
annoying
magical
imp is a thing.
Yes. Yeah, not a kid sidekick, but that's its own weird category. Yeah. We should do a panel.
That's your panel next year, your mom.
Yes. Yeah, because that's, you know, Mr. Mixius Pitlick and Batmite. Right. And Aquaman had one named Quisp.
Yes, Quisp.
Yeah.
The Flash had Mopey.
You were not a superhero in the DC universe in the 60s if you didn't have your own annoying imp character. And if I'm correct, wasn't Mopey the one that revealed that he was behind the lightning bolt that hit the Flash? Mm-hmm. And they actually, in the Who's Who entry in like 1985, went out of their way to say all references to a character causing it are invalid.
Yes. Yes, sir.
Can a kid have a kid sidekick?
Sure.
So Zia and Tao from the Mysterious Cities of Gold?
I don't know the show, but people constantly tell me of that show and that it's just the greatest thing that ever happened. People love that show.
Okay, yeah, I am legit surprised that you don't have like the show on some bootleg VHS.
I've never seen it, but I know the people who have seen it love it.
It's number 6 on the best opening theme for that.
Wow. Is there another hand right over here somewhere before?
I was thinking Nog from DS9.
No, on my list of good sidekicks are both Jake Sisko and Nog, because they both get great character arcs.
Right. Yeah. Especially Nog. Well, with that, they also really explore something we don't see a lot of on TV, even in kids' shows, of the friends you make as a kid, and how sometimes as you grow older, you don't stay tight. You kind of drift apart a little bit. You stay in touch, but you don't have that, the line from Stand By Me. You don't ever have friends like you did when you were 13.
Yeah. Their story is very affecting. And they both do a really great job of performing that. And I am here to say that there had better be Captain Nog and Picard.
We got a couple minutes left. Yes.
Somebody mentioned cartoons earlier.
We've been talking cartoons all day now.
A while ago, I had a flashback of Sherman, Mr. Peabody.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Peabody.
That's a good one.
Sherman was the kid's
idol. Oh, yeah. And another time-traveling pair, like on Voyagers.
Okay. Is Bullwinkle Rocky's sidekick? Or is Rocky Bullwinkle's sidekick?
I think Rocky is Bullwinkle's guardian.
Yeah.
I think this is a court-appointed thing.
Yes.
In all honesty.
In compos mentis.
Yeah. It's just like, no, seriously, you've got to take care of this guy.
Somebody keep an eye on the big dumb moose.
Yeah.
And I know that this will violate the American part of the track name, but in the movie Shogun Assassin, which is an adaptation of the Lone Wolf and Cub stories of the Ronin, and who's like carting his child around behind him, the movie Shogun Assassin is narrated by the child. And it is absolutely fascinating and horrifying and hilarious. You get to hear like a 4-year-old say, "My father has killed 346 ninjas," and then there's like slice in the background, 347. It is magnificent.
Hey, Gary.
Yes.
What's that box thing right in front of you all about? What do you have there?
Oh, this is for the Dragon Con charity. We are collecting money for the American Heart Association, and Dragon Con will match $1 for $1 up to $100,000.
All right. Is there anything people should do in the app regarding this panel, Gary?
They should look up in the app this panel. If they enjoyed it, they should give it 5 stars. If they did not enjoy it, then now is the time for quiet contemplation.
All right.
And if you'd like to see more discussion of sidekicks or this kind of thing, please leave a comment. The DragonCon bosses pay very close attention to the ratings and comments in the app. The main thing we ask is it be a constructive comment. This sucked is not a constructive comment. I can't work with that. Saying that they talk too much about Gazoo or Scrappy-Doo, I can work with that.
I think if we devote more than 3 minutes to Gazoo at all, you've talked too much about
it. I disagree vehemently.
This will be the imp showdown next year.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
It's part of his panel on the imps.
Perfect. For now, though, folks, you have survived the Cousin Oliver panel. We should all go out right now and get matching bowl haircuts, I think would be appropriate.
Four wigs.
And at the very least, come up here and get a ribbon. You have all earned a Cousin Oliver ribbon. Thanks, Michael. Thanks, Michael. Thanks, Gary. Yay! Thank all of you.
And also get samplers from my publisher.
Okay, see that? What fun we had. Yeah, if you get to Dragon Con next year, and you should... American Sci-Fi Classics track. That's where you want to be. Thanks again to Michael and Gary, and also Joe, the other director of the Classics track. I don't think Joe was in the room. He was probably hanging out with the cast of Karate Kid or something at that time. Hope you enjoyed it. If we missed your favorite kid sidekick character in our conversation, or your favorite kid with the Cousin Oliver haircut that got added to the cast of your favorite show and ruined it, let us know. You know where to find us. Flopcast.net has all of our contact information. And we will be back next week. Cornflake will be back next week. And we're going to get all caught up with Cornflake, because it's just been nothing but DragonCon talk around here for a few weeks now. Let's find out what Cornflake's been up to. I know she's been up to a lot, because she's been texting me photos that make me jealous of the places she's been lately. So I think we have some good Cornflake on the road information coming up next week. Meanwhile, I can't take it anymore. I do not like being alone here in the studio. I'm gonna go take a nap. Good night.
Where comedy and commentary collide.
Thunder Talk brings a unique variety show style twist
to the fandom podcast genre.
We drop music from some of today's hottest up and coming artists.
We discuss topics of social and political relevance
and deliver our sideways take on the world at large.
If stand up comedy,
NPR,
the Millennium Falcon,
and classic MTV had a baby,
it would be Thunder Talk.
Thunder Talk is part of the ESO Network. Find us at thundertalk.org and on all podcasting platforms.
Oh, you're still here? All right, I'm still here too. Now, all right, secret after show with just me. This is even worse. How do I do the secret after show all by myself? I think this happened maybe once before, and I don't like it. Cornflake's always the prepared one for the after show. I really am not. I did have a thought just now. I don't know if we're going to play any other panels from DragonCon, from DragonCon 2019 here on the Flopcast. Most of the panels that we do there don't really fit the format of the show. Obviously, Cousin Oliver did. I think there's at least one more that we might use. So at some point when we have another gap in our schedule, we might plug in another DragonCon panel. But one of the ones that we're not going to play is Sci-Fi Court. We played Classic Sci-Fi Court on the Flopcast 2 years ago. We did not run it last year, and we're not going to run this year's either. And that's just because Sci-Fi Court has become more visual, and that we use PowerPoint slides and visuals for some of the gags and jokes and stuff. So it just wouldn't work on an audio show, because you're just going to hear an audience laughing, and you're going to be completely clueless about what's going on. But when we talked about Sci-Fi Court, that's where a bunch of delusional defense attorneys, including me and some of the other Classics Track panelists, we attempt to defend really bad movies. And this year I defended Supergirl, the 1984 Helen Slater Supergirl movie, which some people say is a bad movie. I love it. What I forgot to mention when we were doing our DragonCon review show, and I know that Cornflake would have been very interested in this, and I totally forgot to mention the music they used throughout that movie, just as background music and in several different scenes, was by one of Cornflake's very favorite acts of the 1980s, Howard Jones, who we've talked about several times here on the Flopcast. Cornflake loves Howard Jones. I do too, but Cornflake's way into Howard Jones. I totally forgot to mention lots of Howard Jones music throughout Supergirl. Maybe we can trick Cornflake into watching Supergirl sometime, with the promise of some Howard Jones music. Now we're going to find out if Cornflake listens to the secret after show. We'll see if she asks me about Howard Jones in Supergirl. Or maybe she'll never mention it at all, and then we'll know that Cornflake skips the secret after show just like everybody else, except you and me. Either way, we're all winners.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon
or by shopping through Amazon.com or the Tee Public Store, which can all be found at ESONetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.